Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Are you? Are you?
Today I am. I'm Adam Pranica in the streets, and something hateful that Twitter people are calling me in the sheets.
Yeah. We do get some hateful tweets, don't we?
Yeah, really do. I've been hitting the block button lately.
Are you? Because I saw I hit the mute button, but if you...
I recommended the mute button to you as a effective strategy, and then I thought about it a little more, and I was like, why do I want to give someone else access to me who hates me? Let's talk about anything else, Ben.
I could bring us an even more uncomfortable conversation if you're interested.
Oh, boy. Is it uncomfortable fun or uncomfortable awful?
Well, it could be an interesting peek behind the kimono for the viewers.
Well, we really love doing that, don't we?
So we had a little difference of opinion today. And when this episode comes out, this will be an episode distant in the past. But, you know, we each edit a roughly equal number of episodes. And occasionally, I think we both make choices that the other maybe wouldn't have made.
It all boils down to us trying to do what's best for the show and making creative decisions that reflect those sensibilities. And in moments where both of us cannot reach an agreement, or we're not together, or we're not talking, it's incumbent on one of the hosts to make those decisions at the time. And so when this specific decision was made, I had felt possessive about its original creation because it was a decision that I made initially.
Well, let's be specific so we're not dancing around it. So I think this is actually an East Coast, West Coast thing because you have a different ice cream truck music than I have. And I dropped in a different ice cream truck sound for Kevin Uxbridge. And then I like chopped and screwed it to make it sound the way closer to the way the music box sounded in the Kevin Uxbridge episode.
You applied the Uxbridge filter.
Yes. I was like sitting there editing it like, oh my God, like I can't wait for Adam to hear this. I think this is so great. But then when you heard it, you had like a different reaction.
Yeah, and that sucks because it clearly... I don't know whether that's the version that'll go out at this point. Like, who knows? But talking about that version is like, it's great. And it shows so much fucking time put into it, but like the pithy, possessive, creative, sensitive heart of me felt hurt that my initial creative decision was paved over in favor of something else, and so I got defensive about it, and so, I totally admit that.
So I think here's something that I discovered on my commute home today. In kind of thinking about this after we talked about it over the flawless communication medium of text messaging.
The thing you should use to talk to people you really care about things that are very serious, you mean?
Yeah, that one. I I listened back to a previous Kevin Uxbridge bit, and I realized that, so I grew up in Oakland, California, and I had West Coast ice cream truck music. I now live in Brooklyn, New York, and I have East Coast ice cream truck music, and I don't think that I realized that I had changed the music itself. I think I Googled Mr. Softy because that's like the song that I think of when I think of ice cream truck now. But I also think of the song that you used, which I think is Turkey in the Straw. And I think that like somehow my brain made those the same thing when they really aren't the same the same thing. So I was like initially like, right, what the fuck is he talking about? I didn't change the song. I just added a filter. Like worst case scenario, we take the filter back off, you know, and because we were speaking in this perfect medium, obviously, like, all of that was clear to you.
Right, right. And by all, we both agree, none.
Can I propose a compromise?
Of course.
What if
we... Are you trying to lawyer me right now?
Well, I'm just saying, like, easier for me to, at the end of tonight, not re-edit the episode much. But sure, what if we agree to use both tracks and I will remove the filters because I think that they make it too spooky.
Okay. And by, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Both tracks, are you saying that on episodes that you edit, you'll be using East Coast ice cream truck music and on my episodes, the episodes in my custody on my visitation days, I will be playing West Coast ice cream truck music?
I don't even think we need to be that prescriptive. I mean, this is not a paint-by-numbers podcast.
Sure isn't.
So I would say, like, if we have both of them in our shared Dropbox folder, you know, whatever the spirit moves you to use at any given instance. How about that?
Sounds great.
Good talk, Adam. Let's make a podcast.
Let's do it.
This is season 3, episode 20, Tin Man.
I'm glad you pronounced it that way, because everyone else puts the emphasis on the man in this episode. Have you noticed that? When Picard does a log, he's like, we're on our way to visit the Tin Man.
Tin Man.
Isn't that what I said?
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, like everyone emphasizes the man part of Tin Man, which just sounds, it sounds weird. It sounds weird to the ear, Ben.
It's sort of like Wilford Brimley talking about diabetes.
Right.
It's just like, how did you arrive at that decision? Like, you never heard anybody say that way before.
It is never Tin Man. It is always Tin Man.
Tin Man.
Tin Man.
Tin Man.
The ship is up to some routine biz when they get run up on in these streets by the USS Hood.
It's always the Hood, isn't it?
Yeah. Every time you go to the Hood, you get run up on. Just before we started recording, I saw on the Wikipedia page that the USS Hood gets mentioned in the first episode of this show as being like Riker's previous posting.
Oh.
And so like there's like a weird... Like, the captain's like,
hey, Will.
How you doing? That's a very long arc, you know? Like, we've only heard this ship mentioned, and then, like, one time we see it, and it's like, we're supposed to be super familiar with who the captain is and what his relationship is to the characters.
You know, to this day, Will, no one can stay in your quarters. It's been completely taped off.
Hey, Will, we had to put into a starbase and have our holodecks fully removed and replaced.
We had them beamed out and destroyed.
Yeah, it's just like a couple kilometers off the starboard bow of the ship. You just see it.
Like they use way more photon torpedoes than are necessary. Full spread, the works.
So this is like not what ships usually do to each other, but they're doing this because the Enterprise is being put on an emergency detail, and they need the fastest ship in the fleet and the best and brightest. And Captain DeSoto of the Hood is eager to acknowledge that that's not his ship. It is the Enterprise. And
he's sort of small-dogging Picard. He's like, you got a great ship. I got a pile of garbage. You got Commander Riker. I've got this stupid first officer who doesn't have nearly as much sex as him. Like, he's really disparaging about his own ship and crew.
You've got one of the best gimps in the fleet. My gimp box has a very inferior gimp in it.
You are very attractive. I am gross and disgusting.
Yeah, just short of going, we're not worthy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Picard goes, you know, it actually comes from the Algonquin word, Milwaukee.
Riker is just licking this up, though. He loves getting compliments in front of other people.
Yeah.
He just sort of sits up in his chair and gives a little wiggle.
Mm-hmm. But his mood changes from good to bad when it is announced that they are going to be taking on a mission specialist by the name of Tam Elbrun. And Riker's like, the Tam Elbrun from the thing, the something something, which I guess is some catastrophe in the past that Riker seems to be the only person on the ship that cares about this catastrophe, by the way. Like, everybody else, like, yeah, Tam Elbrun, that one.
I've found that when a historical moment is known as a catastrophe, it's pretty bad. It's a bad sign.
Yeah, but Troy is personally familiar with this guy, and Picard is like, oh, like, you guys used to hang? And she's like, no, I used to treat him for mental. That's the throw to title.
That's the diagnosis.
Yeah.
I used to treat him for mind stuff. With my mind. So they go to the transporter room to meet this guy, and onto the transporter pad beams low-rent Michael Rapaport. Who is wearing, like, a Mikhail Baryshnikov male ballet costume.
Yeah, it's like, it really has some serious original series Star Trek vibes.
Yeah.
And also just some, like, space pajama vibes.
Man, Ben, this show can really, like, lean into a pleat, can't they?
Yeah, there are more pleats than are, strictly speaking, legal on this costume.
Like, a costume designer is having a conversation somewhere that goes like, I can't put any more pleats in these pants. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And the costume department's like, do it! Double it!
You're not going home until there's 10 times as many pleats on that shirt.
1,000 more pleats or you're fired. The pleat sweat, what's it called? A sweat box? Sweat lodge?
Yeah, sweatshop.
Sweat. Oh, boy. I would not be good at a game show. Ben, you also got me drunk on your previous, on your other podcast.
So. Oh, yeah, you're a guest on an episode of Let's Drink About It. I have no way of calculating when that will have come out with relation to this, but I think it will beat this to press.
Okay.
So if you go listen to a recent episode of Let's Drink About It, it's guested by none other than Adam Pranica.
It could be canonical Greatest Gen if you make a big enough case for it.
Yeah, well, let's not get it carried away.
No, let's not.
Yeah, so Tam is here because he is a super telepath. He was born with telepathy. He's a Betazoid, and most Betazoids, like Superman, develop their superpowers in adolescence. He was born able to read minds, and I guess this usually means that people with this condition on Beta Z are crazy pants, typically speaking.
He must have been a real fussy baby.
Yeah. I mean, just think about all the things he would have heard in his mind as a baby.
Imagine being born and having the empathy code upon you.
Yeah.
Like, you're feeling the birth in a pretty unique way, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. And so his specialty is getting the Federation in touch with... He's worked very hard his whole life to be somewhat normal, but he's very eccentric. He doesn't fit in. Like, Picard definitely is, like, scowling right off the bat because he just doesn't dig this guy's vibe. But his specialty
is... He's the best mind guy in the Federation.
But he's a loose cannon.
No one wants to work with Tam Albron. That guy's a dick.
Tam, I'm going to need your shield and your peace. You've gone too far this time, and the mayor's breathing down my neck.
Do you want me to solve crime, or do you want me to do it right?
I'm not going to go buy the book, not for you, not for anybody. There's minds out there that need to be read, and I'm the man to do the job.
Who's going to do it? You, Captain? I don't think so. So wouldn't you know it, Picard's a pretty by-the-book kind of guy, and doesn't have a whole lot of patience for Michael Rapaport's loose cannon behavior.
Yeah, but they need him because he is an expert in getting the Federation in touch with species that don't necessarily make an easy group to interact with on a linguistic basis, because he can go into their minds. And he's been like the delegate to some world with a non-humanoid species that have a very different pace of life, and it's some fun world building, like just kind of offhand remarks about this guy's backstory, like different stuff he's done. He's like, oh man, like they must be in touch with species that are super weird and cool that they're at peace with, so they don't like get brought up in episodes, you know?
I have nothing to say about that. I'm sorry, Ben. That was a comprehensive description of his backstory.
And so what he's here for is they've discovered a ship/creature in orbit of a star that is on the verge of collapse. And it is a ship/creature in a way that they're like, this thing is alive. It lives in space. It's huge. It's like the size of a starship, but it has a mind. And we want to do what the Federation do and make first contact with it. But this star is going to blow. And if it blows, it's taking the Tin Man out with it. And to make matters just slightly more complicated, the star is in Romulan territory. And what Tam neglects to mention right off the bat is that the Romulans are aware of this thing and are in, moving very quickly to go be first to meeting it.
Right. It's a race to meet the space pine cone. And so the Enterprise hits the gas, heads out there.
The guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you got find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So as they're en route, we start finding out more and more about this Tam Albron guy and what it's like to be him. He's complaining a bunch about being on the ship and hearing everyone's thoughts and feelings all at once, which has got to be a real pain in the ass to... here's a guy who has said he loves being alone. He loves working solo on the missions that he takes. And now he's on this great big ship with thousands of people. So he naturally gravitates towards Data as a guy to hang out with because he's not a challenge in that way. There's nothing for him to read with Data. He's just a what you see is what you get kind of guy.
Yeah, and that's a great comfort to Tam, who, you know, we come to learn is... because of his unique ability, kind of ironically, a terribly lonely character.
Yeah.
You know, he is swamped by other people's thoughts at all times, and this kind of forces him into this eccentricity and loneliness. There's a very interesting scene where, like, Picard and Dr. Crusher and Counselor Troy kind of talk about this. There's a lot of character building with this guy. And like while they're building his character, they'll kind of intercut between his story of just trying to bide his time while they while they rush to get to this star, and the bridge, which is largely under the command of Commander Data, when they're like realizing that they have a Romulan on their tail, and the Romulans are doing something with their engine that is making their cloak not work quite as well as it normally would. So they're like just barely able to detect it, that this is happening, but it means that they're not going to beat the Romulans like they thought they were.
It's sort of like that submarine analog of like when something squeaks on the Red October, everyone can hear it, so it's not totally invisible anymore. The same thing goes for these cloaked ships, right? They need a ton of energy to keep the cloak up, to keep them perfectly invisible. And if they're stressing any other system, that cloak's not working perfectly, and so they're just barely red on the sensors.
Yeah, that's a great analogy to one of my favorite films, Adam.
I try to include Red October references whenever I can, just for you, Ben.
I really appreciate that. This has been a very therapeutic episode for me so far.
One episode only.
So we come to know more and more about Tin Man as well. It is thought to be a creature that may have been bred or may just naturally have occurred in some evolutionary way. But it's out there, and it's like the last of its kind. And Tam has actually been sort of in touch with it more than he initially let on. Like, and he says it's not like he's been conscious, and Troy is like completely baffled by this because they've been light years away from it, which I feel like the range of Betazoid mind reading has been kind of vaguely ill-defined, probably for good reason. Like, it's something that you can kind of like make work for the plot rather than the other way around.
Yeah, but it really blows Troy's mind when Tam discloses that he evidently has a range of empathic powers that is like light years upon light years.
We're light years away. That's impossible, even for you.
Impossible for me. Maybe not impossible for Tin Man.
Which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
We get the idea that the Tin Man is very old and very wise, because whenever anyone talks about it, a Native American pan flute plays.
Yeah.
Which is the lazy man's way of underscoring wisdom. On an early 90s TV show, I guess.
I was sort of wondering when I was watching it, like, whether that music was as fucked out as it seems from our modern perspective at the time, or whether that was like an early use of that kind of music, like if it was already a cliche or if it only seems like a cliche in retrospect.
That's a great question. God, I'm trying to think of anything to compare it to at the time, like early 90s style. I mean, I can only tell you that that sensitivities then weren't what they are now. And so, I mean, yeah. I doubt there was much of a needle to peg on this stuff. But yeah, I definitely picked up on it, and it was a little bit smirky.
I didn't mind the music in this. I definitely noticed it, but I didn't hate it. They get to the star system, and as they're getting there, the Romulans come out of warp and essentially pull like a drive-by shooting on the Enterprise, where they like nail it a bunch of times with disruptors before they really can do anything.
These are some of the biggest bangers we've seen. Like, massive bangers.
Big bad bangers, but the biggest banger is yet to come. The Romulans have really, like, fucked the ship up, and they've drained their shields, and that means they've got to, like, pull an all-stop and give Geordi half an hour to patch everything up. And, it's like one of those scenes where, like, they cut down to engineering, and Geordi's like running around like a chicken with his head cut off, and he's like, I have 30 minutes of work to do down here before we can do anything. And Picard's like, you've got 10. And cut to, like, Data and Tam chilling in Data's quarters like they have all the time in the world.
If you need one guy to solve an engineering problem at the maximum amount of speed, it's Data. And
it's
he's,
weird,
like, enjoying
right?
tea in his condo.
Yeah.
Not and, only that, but did you think it was weird that the Enterprise didn't return fire? Like, they could have returned fire. They knew the ship was there the whole time.
My thinking on that was that this was... Like, at some point, the Romulans say that this is their space. And I think that they must have known enough about, like, what the Romulans claim to own that they didn't want to start, like, a war over first contact with a weird alien spaceship just because, you know, like, if they started firing, they don't have any, like, good pretense of being there on a scientific mission.
Yeah, I mean, they know that they're kind of in the wrong, it sounds like.
Yeah. But, you know, this is, like, not the neutral zone or anything. This is, like, I guess the Romulans' claim on this space is fairly dubious. So, but it's an interesting point.
So Tam, at this point, has said that this alien, the only reason this alien ship person is here, the Tin Man.
Tin Man.
Is to commit suicide, right? Like, it wants to hang out by this about-to-explode star so it can die in peace.
It's like a whale washing itself up on a beach.
Yeah, that's it.
But it's been in touch with Tam, so it's like it's definitely hedging a little bit on this whole suicide plan.
And Tam's in the heads of all parties. Like, Tam knows what the Pinecone's thinking. He knows what the Romulans are thinking.
Yeah.
And he gets with Picard right away, and he's like, look, those Romulans have tried to talk to the Space Pinecone, and it's not working, so they're going to try to blow it up.
Right. And he like gets he like runs up to the view screen and like puts his hands on his temples. I don't know if he actually puts his hands on his temples, but I feel like I remember it that way. And and he gets the pine cone to like do a spin around, which emits a bunch of crazy light that totally destroyifies the Romulan ship. And it's like the blast wave that knocks Captain Sulu's ship off its rocker in the beginning of Undiscovered Country, where like by the time it gets out to the Enterprise, it like
it's the Praxis
it hits them pretty
explosion.
Hard. Yeah, and it fucks their shit up. Like Picard goes flying across the bridge.
This is a correction because this was the biggest banger I think we've ever seen on the show.
I think so,
they
yeah.
They are rocked.
I wrote down Big Banger in all caps in my notes. So.
Yeah, it flings Picard against the wall.
Yeah.
He normally doesn't get that much distance.
No.
I am the cutest of all. Lock faces on that vessel. I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
There's two Romulan ships at play here, and they know that the other one is, like, further behind. The one that had come was like had like pushed itself so hard that it was in like serious, you know, it had like seriously fucked its engine up getting there, and they know the others are not far away, but they're still like between the Romulan attack and this banger, the Enterprise is in pretty rough shape, and they're still fairly far away from the star, so they're. They've got some work to do before they can kind of get the show back on the road.
Yeah, and it all comes down to Geordi's ability to do it.
Yeah.
This through line continues throughout the series. Like, is the best place for Data really on the bridge at this moment? Steering the ship around? Doing sensor stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, he's definitely really good at ops, but he's just also really good at engineering.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he could take off an arm, stick it over in engineering, sort of divide his effort a little bit.
Well, the other, like, rising tension at this point is that Tam really wants to go aboard Tin Man, and Picard is like, can we just talk to it screen to screen?
Were you talking about... Tin Man?
Tin Man.
Tin Man.
Just now?
Sorry, what did I say?
You said Tin Man. I wasn't sure who you were talking about.
Total brain fart. My sincere apologies. I don't even know how you could get those two things confused.
I know.
But yeah, like Picard is very impressed with Tam's abilities, and I don't think anybody thinks that Tam doesn't want to do the right thing, but they're pretty sure he's bonkers, and so he doesn't really trust Tam's judgment enough to like put him on this away mission, and it really takes a lot of McLaughlin grouping
issue one
to get Picard to a place where he's willing to beam Tam and Data over to Tin Man. And when they do, it's like one of those like laparoscopic butthole proctology videos inside there. It's you know, it's like the inside.
It looks
of a
very
living...
flatulent.
Yeah. It's like you know, when they're like looking for polyps and they show, you know, Katie Couric's keister on TV or whatever.
It is exactly that. Anyone who has seen that footage, I think, will tell you that that they basically stole that footage and used it for this scientific purpose. The B story is that when you turn 40, you should go get the exam. We know you don't want to get it.
It's not the most fun thing in the world. Yeah. They walk around and Tam is like able to kind of interact with this thing in a way that Data is not. At one point he puts his hand against the wall and it like sinks into it like the wall is like a plane that Tam can just reach into, and Data tries to do the same thing and it's just a solid surface.
It's making a bunch of noises too, like it's kind of burping and farting and it's all gooey.
And Tam can even kind of cause the ship to reconfigure itself. Like he puts his hand against a surface and a chair like appears in the middle of the, you know, the equivalent of Tin Man's bridge.
You're talking about the gooey Eames chair?
Yeah.
He makes a little gooey Eames.
Yeah. It looked like maybe they made that model out of wax and then melted it and then played the footage in reverse. It definitely
looked like that.
It was pretty sweet.
Yeah, it looked like an attempt at practical.
It was definitely better looking than what it would have looked like 10 years later with a similar show trying to make that look like something that happened with CG, you know?
Yeah, like, it's sort of related to the Odo effect. Mm-hmm. Like, and it looks better here than the Odo effect looks
totally
10 years down the road. It's less glossy, it's grosser to its benefit.
Absolutely.
Like it should look sloppy, and that actually helps with the world building.
Yeah, and Tam is like a different man. The second he gets aboard this thing, he's like way more at ease. He's initially like kind of overwhelmed because Tin Man is so excited to have him that it like starts downloading its memories into his head, and he's like, yo, chill. But then it like they find like an equilibrium, and he's like, hey Data, like, thank you for coming and experiencing this super cool thing with me. I'm not going back to the Federation with Tin Man. We're gonna go do our own thing, but I really appreciate you guys Ubering me over here.
5 stars.
My love is a people.
At this point, like, a supernova is imminent, and up until now, the Enterprise has not been able to communicate with either Tam or Data. So, over on the Enterprise, shit is getting really stressful. While on the Pinecone, everything is really blissed out.
Yeah, man.
So the A and the B stories are in pretty tight conflict, emotionally, anyway.
And the second Romulan ship shows up, and they're like,
Enterprise, your presence here is a violation of Romulan space. You will leave immediately.
It's a very archetypical conversation between Picard and the Romulans, which is like, what? We were just here doing science. What are you talking about? You know?
Wouldn't you like to science with us?
Yeah.
And the Romulans are like, what the fuck? No. I do not want to do science with you. I do not want to be your lab partner.
Dissect your own fucking frog.
You aren't even in this class.
They start to realize that the supernova is imminent, and they're like not sure if they're going to be able to get out of there in time to avoid being destroyed by this star. And the Tin Man does another pulse that has the effect of sending the Romulans and the Enterprise like well outside of the blast radius of the star, and they like watch the star Nova out from a distance. And it's a real like shocking moment because they realize that Data was like still on the other ship.
You see the flash, you know, you're so far away, you're too far away to do anything about it. Feels like he might be gone this time. He might have finally succeeded in committing suicide.
I feel like they really sold this moment for me. I think that when I watched it as a kid, I fully felt it because I didn't know like what next week's episode was going to hold. But it really worked for me on this viewing as well. And Data eventually kind of reappears on the bridge and tells them that Tam is going to be out of touch for a little while.
I felt like the end of the episode indicated that we weren't sure if Tam and the alien died in the Nova.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, could you?
I didn't take that from it.
Could you
be
sure that
they
didn't?
Yeah, I guess you can't. Other than that, Data appeared so far after the explosion. So, like, where was he? Like, if.
Yeah.
Like how could it have set a delay on his beam out like that?
I guess the way that I read the character part of this was that Tam was in so much stress and was seeking like the sort of peace that could only come by being by himself. This old alien Pinecone was also seeking, you know, a way out. Together, like they sort of felt the same way about their circumstances. Maybe they decided to go out together, or conversely, they could have found in each other what they were unable to find by themselves, and then that's probably the more hopeful outcome in that they continue on together much happier than they were apart.
Yeah. Well, Data winds up at his bumming out window, which he's ended an episode or two at before, and he tells Deanna Troi that his experience with Tam made him realize that, you know, Tam had searched his whole life for a place to call home and finally found it on Tin Man. And Data really felt like the Enterprise was his home. And it's kind of a touching little sentimental moment at the end of the ep.
Yeah. The Enterprise is his Tin Man.
Tin Man.
Pretty cool.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
I liked some performances in it. I thought I liked Tam's performance, even though I painted him
really
with the Michael
too.
Rapaport brush. Kind of meant that as a backhanded compliment because I really dig Michael Rapaport.
Uh-huh.
But like he plays so unhinged in a really cool way, and he also like helps world build a little bit of the Betazoids, which up until now just seemed like really benign. Like, yeah, they're just like deep thinkers and empaths and what could be the struggle for them, but knowing that childhood could be as difficult as it was for him, I thought did a lot of heavy lifting in terms of what Betazoid life and culture might be like. So I thought as a world builder he did great work, but as an actor and as a character I really enjoyed him.
I totally agree. I love this episode.
I'm saying that by saying I'm not sure how I feel about the episode. I like the episode less than I like the performances. But you like it. You like the episode.
I thought it was terrific.
Yeah.
It's one of my faves, and I can definitely see some problems with it, but they don't bother me that much. And I love like the idea of Starfleet, like, you know, like this is a mission we're sending like our best man on, and it's like hey, we really want to meet this new species. You know, like Starfleet's idea of a high priority situation is often like there's some cool science we could do.
Yeah, it feels like 4 out of 5 missions are Uber missions or eliminating a plague somewhere. It's nice to see a first contact mission, you know, It feels like what Star Trek's about.
Yeah, totally. Adam, I think we have some interesting information coming to us over subspace radio.
We better get to it then.
Yeah.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
We only have one priority one message today, Adam. It's for Laura from her husband, Jeff. Jeff says, it's hard to believe that after a decade of being married, we still share the same love of things that brought us together. Things like stupid Star Trek night, holodeck fun time, and the perfect male form known as William T. Riker. You'll always be my number one to greatest Gen Con, Q air horn, my natural Jaeger, and most important, my drunk Shimoda. I love you. Wow, that's
sweet.
That is really sweet.
I love that Jeff gave us production notes for this, like cues for drops and stuff.
Yeah. Did I say you'll always be my number one? It says you'll always be my plus one to greatest Gen Con.
Right.
I like that we know that Jeff and Laura are going to be in attendance at Greatest Gen Con. So that's exciting.
There's two.
At least know two people are coming in addition to us.
Please buy some food and beverage. We are getting killed on the deposit, Laura and Jeff.
Wow, that is very sweet. I wonder if that's like an anniversary message or just... or just a nice, nice message.
They sound pretty close. Well, no, it says her husband, Jeff. So they got to be already married, right?
Yeah.
You know what? They're going to be super comfortable in the full-size bed in the one hotel room we're getting for Greatest Gen Con. And so far, it sounds like they called dibs.
They sound sweet enough that I will sleep on the floor so that they can share the bed.
I won't. Like, they sound sweet and everything, but come on, man, it's Greatest Gen Con.
Yeah, I guess we are the stars of Greatest Gen Con.
It's true.
No, come on, Jaeger's the star.
Yeah.
We're just hosting it.
Jaeger is getting above the title treatment for this one.
Yeah.
Biff Jaeger presents Greatest Gen Con 2017.
Well, if you'd like to send a Priority One message, very easy. You just go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. You can do a personal message for $100 or a commercial message for $200. Every single one of these helps us keep the lights on around here, and we really appreciate the folks that step up and do them. So thank you.
It's so easy to do, Ben. It seems like something that would happen when you get drunk, right? You're two clicks away.
Yeah. That'd be good.
I'm going to drunk priority message this one in. I think we'd get some pretty nonsensical ones coming.
Yeah.
I encourage that behavior.
I think so. I think I do too.
All right. Good stuff.
Darmok, Angelad, Tanagra.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves, in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one-size-fits-all on a social media platform. Or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Good, fast, and cheap. Pick three? That's right. Today's episode is sponsored in part by Factor, and Factor meals hit all three sides of the triangle. They are good. They taste really tasty, they've never been frozen, and they are chef-created, dietitian-approved meals. Fast!
These meals are ready in as little as 2 minutes if you're using a microwave, or just a couple of more minutes if you're using a toaster oven. And cheap. They are very affordable and a great way to fill out your weekly meal budget with some options that are not going to break the bank. And guess what? Factor's also eco-conscious. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/scarves50 and use the code SCARVES50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code SCARVES50 at factormeals.com/scarves50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda? See how I put the emphasis on the other word that time? You like that?
You put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
I appreciated that. Yep, my drunk Shimoda in this episode is Data. And it's for a little moment. We talked about that kind of 10 minutes that he and Tam treat like they got plenty of time to go down to Data's quarters and have a hang.
Yeah.
Tam at one point goes and lifts up a cloth that Data has hanging over an easel. Data has totally painted a space butthole. It really just, I thought it was so funny. Oh yeah, like Data's fantasizing about something he could die in.
Oh man, yeah, that looked so familiar. Like the non-verbal acting in that scene, I thought was really fun too.
Yeah.
Like, Tam's like, is this what I think it is? And Data, with his eyes, is like, oh yeah, that's what you think it is. Put the curtain down. Pretty great.
How about yourself?
Occasionally, I will spotlight a moment of physical acting that gives me great pleasure. In this episode, I found a great example. So, Tin Man has...
I feel like I know what you're going to say.
...has hit the button and... frisbee golfed the Enterprise far away from its position. And so we get that cut scene to the interior of the ship where the bridge crew is sort of rumbling around. And we know what a banger looks like, Ben. You've seen bangers before.
This
bangers
is not
are
that.
When people get bangers are when people get flung out of their station, flung into walls. We see some in this episode. But this frisbee scene involves Riker and Picard standing and spinning in place, like counter-directional to each other. Everyone else is sort of like shaking around, and they are like stand and spin, like square dancing.
It is so silly.
It's ridiculous. And what's amazing is like they cut to it, then they cut to exterior, and they cut back to it. I feel like if there's only one shot at the interior, you miss it and you don't get it, and it's not funny. But yeah. To show it and then come back to it is like, oh, right in your face. So
very fun
stuff. The idea that someone's giving them the direction to just, no, you don't have to bang it. There's no banging here. Just spin around. There you go. That's it. No, spin in different directions, guys. There it is. And cut. That was like that. Like, it was hilarious to me.
Yeah.
So
man.
Double Shimoda. What do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is season 3, episode 21, Hollow Pursuits. The crew struggles to help a young engineer whose obsession with a fantasy world on the holodeck is endangering the ship. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I do. This episode is the realization of something we've been talking about for quite a while, Ben, which is, how much trouble can you get into on the holodeck? Evidently quite a bit.
Quite a bit. We don't have any way to get around watching it, so I suppose we shall watch it.
The only way out is through.
If you're going through hell, Adam, keep going.
If you're going through this podcast, a great way to support it is by going to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah.
And joining a bunch of our viewers in their support of the production of this show.
And we could really use your support. Proprietor of Maximum Fun, Jesse Thorne, recently referred all of Jordan Jesse Go's listeners who have problems with factual statements on their program to take them up with us. So, I guess we have that to deal with.
Our viewers are not shy about sharing the things that we miss on our own
yeah,
show. So
that's true.
That could be a nightmare for us.
Yeah. So anybody that's willing to step up and financially support the production of this program is massively appreciated. Who else is appreciated?
There's a thriving and chatty Twitterverse out there talking about our show using the hashtag #GreatestGen.
Yeah.
They're also talking to us. I'm on there as @CutForTime, and Ben is on there as @BenjaminR. That's AHR.
You can also go on Reddit and Facebook. There are very busy communities there as well. I think there's probably a lot of crossover between the three, but all are fun places to go have a chat and talk about the episodes and also like see other stuff people are posting. And it's just a really like sweet group of people that I feel really touched to be involved with. So feel very lucky there. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for the music that plays during our special Jumbotron messages. With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that will largely circle around masturbation jokes, probably.
That episode will be cross-posted in r/jerkinit.
Yeah. If you want to, you can cross-post this episode in r/nofap.
Oh, that's a Reddit joke I get.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.